disturb anything, he stepped into the crime scene. Emma's body was parallel to the walls, her head facing away from the stairs. As he walked toward her, Will's eyes kept going back to the handprint, the perfect formation of the palm and fingers. His gut roiled as he thought about what the guy had been doing when he left the impression. Will stopped a few feet from the girl. "She was probably killed here," he told Paul, knowing from the pool of blood soaking into the carpet that the girl had not been moved. He crouched down by the body, resting his hands on his knees so he wouldn't accidentally touch anything. Emma's shorts were bunched around one ankle, her feet bare. Her underwear and shirt had been yanked out of the way by her attacker. Teeth marks showed dark red against the white of her breasts. Scrapes and bruises trailed up the insides of her thighs, swollen welts showing the damage that had been done. She was thin, with shoulder-length blonde hair like her mother and broad shoulders like her dad. There was no telling what she had looked like in life. Her face was beaten so severely that the skull had collapsed on itself, obscuring the eyes, the nose. The only point of reference was the mouth, which gaped open in a toothless, bloody hole. Will checked on Paul. The man still stood frozen at the top of the stairs. His big, meaty hands were clasped in front of his chest like a nervous old woman waiting for bad news. Will didn't know what exactly he could see, if the distance softened some of the violence or made it worse. Will told him, "She was beaten. I can see what looks like two knife wounds. One's just below her breast, the other is above her belly button." "She got it pierced last year." Paul gave a strained laugh. Will looked back at him, and Paul took this as a sign to continue. "She and her best friend went to Florida and came back with..." He shook his head. "You think shit like that's funny when you're a kid, but when you're a parent, and your daughter comes home with a ring on her belly..." His face crumpled as he fought emotions. Will turned his attention back to the girl. There was a silver ring looped through the skin of her belly button. Paul asked, "Was she raped?" "Probably." He'd said the word too fast. The sound hung in the stagnant air.
"Before or after?"
Paul's voice shook. He was more than familiar with the dark deeds men were capable of. The blood on her abdomen and chest was smeared, indicating someone had lain on top of her after the worst of the beating was over. Still, Will told him, "The coroner will have to answer that. I can't tell."
"Are you lying to me?"
"No," Will answered, trying not to look at the handprint, to let the guilt eat him up inside so that he ended up being the one to tell this man the horrible truth about his daughter's violent, degrading death. Suddenly, he felt Paul behind him. Will stood, blocking him. "This is a crime scene. You need to..." Paul's mouth dropped open. He slumped against Will like all the air had left his body. "It's not..." His mouth worked, tears welling into his eyes.
"It's not her."
Will tried to turn the man away from the sight of his daughter. "Let's go downstairs. You don't need to see any more of this."
"No!"
Paul countered, his fingers digging into Will's arm.
"I mean it. It's not her."
He shook his head back and forth, vehement.
"It's not Emma."
"I know this is hard for you."
"Fuck you with what you know."
Paul pushed himself away from Will.
"Has anybody ever told you that your daughter is dead?"
He kept shaking his head, staring at the girl.
"That's not her."
Will tried to reason with him. "Her navel is pierced, like you said." He shook his head, his words choking in his throat.
"It's not..."
"Come on," Will coaxed, pushing him back a few steps, trying to keep him from contaminating the scene any more than he already had. Paul's words came out in an almost giddy rush.
"Her hair! Trash! Emma's got longer hair than that. It goes down to her back almost, and she's got a birthmark on her right arm, Emma does. Look, there's nothing there. There's no birthmark."
Will checked the arm. Except for the blood, the skin was a perfect white.
"Right arm!"
Paul insisted, annoyed. He pointed to the other arm.
"She's got a birthmark."
When Will did not respond, he took out his wallet. Receipts and papers fell onto the floor as he dug around inside.
"It's weird, shaped like a handprint. The skin's darker there."
He found what he was looking for and handed Will a photograph. Emma was much younger in the picture. She was wearing a cheerleading outfit. One arm was cocked to her hip, holding a pom-pom. Paul was right. The birthmark looked as if someone had wrapped his hand around her arm and left a print. Still, Will said,
Paul. Let's not... Abby! It's not her! It's not Emma! Paul was laughing, elated. Look at her arm, Tress. There's nothing there. This isn't Emma. It's gotta be Kayla. They look alike. They trade clothes all the time. It's gotta be her.
Abigail ran upstairs, Faith fast behind her. Stay back. Will blocked their way, holding out his arms like a crossing guard, physically pushing Paul back. The man was still smiling a fool's grin. All he was thinking was that his daughter wasn't dead. His mind hadn't made the next leap.
Keep them here, Will told Faith.
She nodded, stepping in front of the parents. Carefully, Will walked back toward the dead girl. He crouched down again, studying the shoe prints, the spray on the wall. Crossing the dead girl's body was a fine arc of blood that caught his attention. It went just under her breasts, like a finely drawn line. Will hadn't noticed it the first time. But right now, he would have bet his pension that the blood had come from the kid downstairs.
It's not her, Paul insisted. It's not Emma.
Faith began. It's hard sometimes when you lose someone you love. Denial is understandable.
Paul exploded.
Would you listen to me, you stupid bitch? I'm not going through the 12 steps of grief. I know what my fucking daughter looks like.
Leo called.
Everything okay up there?
It's under control, Faith said, sounding like the exact opposite was true.
Will looked at the dead girl's bare feet. The soles were clean, seemingly the only part of her body that didn't have some pattern of blood on it. He stood up, asking Abigail, "Tell me what happened." She was shaking her head, unable to let herself hope.
"Is it Emma? Is that her?"
Will took in the faint streaks of dark red on the skirt of Abigail's white tennis dress, the transfer patterns across her chest. He kept his voice firm, even though his heart was thumping hard enough to press against his ribs. "Tell me exactly what happened from the moment you got here."
"I was in my car."
"From the stairs?" Will interrupted. "You came up the stairs. Did you go to the body? Did you come into this area?"
"I stood here," she said, indicating the floor in front of her.
"What did you see?"
Tears streamed down her cheeks.
Her mouth moved, trying to get out words as her eyes scanned the dead body. Finally, she said,
"I saw him
standing over her.
He had a knife in his hand. I felt threatened."
"I know you felt like your life was in danger," Will assured her. "Just tell me what happened next." Her throat worked.
"I panicked. I stepped back and fell down the stairs."
"What did he do?"
"He came after me, came down the stairs."
"Did he have the knife in his hand?" She nodded. "Was it raised?"
She nodded again, then shook her head. "I don't know. No, it was at his side." She tightened her hand to her side to show him. "He was running down the stairs. It was at his side."
"Did he raise the knife when he got to the bottom of the stairs?"
"I kicked him before he got to the bottom to throw him off balance."
"What happened to the knife?"
"He dropped it when he fell. He hit me in the head. I thought he was going to kill me."
Will turned around, looked at the shoe prints again. They were scattered, chaotic. Two people had stepped in the blood, walked back and forth, struggled. "Are you sure you didn't come into the hallway up here at all?" She nodded her head. "Listen to me very carefully. You didn't walk around up here? You didn't go to your daughter? You didn't step in any blood?"
"No, I was here, right here. I stopped at the top of the stairs and he came toward me. I thought he was going to kill me. I thought..."
She put her hand to her mouth, unable to continue. Her voice cracked as she asked her husband,
"It's not Em?"
Will told Faith, "Keep them both right here," as he headed down the stairs. Leo was standing in the front doorway, talking to one of the uniformed patrolmen. He asked Will,
"What's going on?"
"Don't wait for Pete," he ordered, stepping over the body. "I need an ID on this guy right now." He found Abigail Campano's shoes in the parlor under the coffee table. The tread was a court zigzag, not a waffle pattern. Except for a couple of scuff marks on the toes, there wasn't a trace of blood on them. In the foyer, Leo was taking a pair of latex gloves from his pocket.
"The nosy neighbor across the street says she saw a car parked in the driveway a couple of hours ago. Could be yellow, could be white, could be four doors, could be two."
Will checked the dead man's sneakers. Waffle pattern. Dried blood caked in the tread. He said, "Give me those." Leo handed him the gloves, and Will put them on. "You got your pictures, right?"
"Yeah, what's going on?"
Carefully, Will peeled up the dead man's t-shirt. The material was still soaking wet where it had bunched up at the waist, and it left an odd pinkish hue on the exposed skin. Leo asked,
"You want to tell me what you're doing?"
There was so much blood that it was hard to see anything. Will gently pressed the abdomen, and a narrow slit opened up in the flesh, black liquid oozing out.
"Shit,"
Leo hissed.
"Did the mother stab him?"
No.
Will saw how it must have happened. The young man kneeling beside the body upstairs, a knife plunged into his chest. He would have pulled out the knife, arterial blood spraying over the dead girl's body. The man would have tried to stand, staggering to get help even as his lung collapsed. That's when Abigail Campano had appeared at the top of the stairs. She saw the man who had killed her daughter. He saw the woman who could possibly save them all. Leo looked up the stairs, then back at the dead kid, finally understanding.
Shit!
Will snapped off the gloves, trying not to think about all the lost time. He went to the bloody bare footprint, saw that the weight had been on the ball of the foot when it was made. There was a small cluster of blood droplets on the bottom stair, 6 of them. Will talked it out for Leo's benefit as much as his own. Emma was unconscious. The killer carried her over his shoulder. Will narrowed his eyes, putting the pieces together. He stopped here, at the bottom of the stairs, to catch his breath. Her head and arms were hanging down his back. The blood drops on the bottom tread are almost perfectly round, which means they fell straight down. Will pointed to the footprint. He shifted her weight forward. Her foot touched the floor. That's why it's facing up the stairs instead of toward the door. After carrying her down the stairs, he had to readjust the body so that he could carry her out the front door. Leo tried to cover himself.
The mother's story held up. There was no way I could...
It doesn't matter. Will glanced up. Abigail and Paul Campano were staring over the railing, watching, disbelieving.
Does Kayla have a car?
Abigail spoke hesitantly.
She drives a white Prius.
Will took out his phone and hit the speed dial. He told Leo, try to nail down the old lady on the car. Show her a photo array if you have to. Check all 911 calls coming out of the area in the last 5 hours. Get your guys to re-canvass the neighborhood. There were a lot of joggers out earlier who are probably back home by now. I'll notify Highway Patrol. There's an on-ramp to the interstate less than a mile from here. Will put the phone to his ear just as Amanda picked up. He didn't waste time with pleasantries.
I need a team here. It looks like we've got a kidnapping.
Chapter 2. Emma Campano's bedroom was almost as big as Will's entire house. He hadn't had his own room as a kid. He hadn't really had his own anything until he turned 18, and the Atlanta Children's Home gave him a pat on the back and a check from the state. His first apartment was a box, but it was his box. Will could still remember what it felt like to leave his toothbrush and shampoo in the bathroom without having to worry someone else would swipe them, or worse. Even to this day, there was a certain joy he felt from opening the refrigerator and knowing that he could eat anything he wanted. He wondered if Paul got a similar feeling when he walked through his multi-million-dollar home. Did his chest puff out with pride when he saw the dainty antique chairs and the obviously expensive canvases that hung on the walls? When he locked the front door at night, did he still get that sense of relief that no one had managed to take it all away from him? There was no arguing that the man had made a good life for his family. With the pool out back and the screening room in the basement, you'd never guess he had spent his early years perfecting the role of a juvenile delinquent. Paul had never been quick, but he was street smart, and even as a kid, he knew how to make a dollar. Abigail was obviously the brains in the family. She was right behind Will in figuring out what had really happened that morning in the Campano home. Will had never in his life seen someone so stricken with horror as when the woman realized that she had probably killed an innocent man. Worse, an innocent man who might have been trying to help her daughter. She'd become hysterical. A doctor had been called to sedate her. Typical Paul, he was working the angles before his wife's head hit the pillow. He'd taken out his cell phone and made 2 calls, one to his attorney and one to his influential father-in-law, Hoyt Bentley. 10 short minutes later, Will's own cell phone had started ringing. Once again, the governor had contacted the director of the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, who had pressed Amanda, and she in turn had pressed Will.
"Don't fuck this up,"
Amanda had told him in her usual supportive way. The procedure in kidnapping cases was simple. Have a cop with the family at all times, and have the family by the phone for the ransom call. Even as the doctor stuck a needle in her arm, Abigail Campano had still refused to leave her home.
There was a guest suite in the carriage house. After making sure the apartment was not part of the crime scene, Will had sent the parents there, along with Hamish Patel, a GBI hostage negotiator. Paul had bristled about being assigned a babysitter, which meant he either had something to hide or thought he could control the situation without the police getting in his way. Knowing the way Paul worked, it was probably a little of both. He had been so uncooperative during questioning that Will was actually looking forward to the lawyer showing up so the man could tell his client it was okay to give a straight answer. Or maybe Hamish Patel could work some of his magic. The hostage negotiator had been trained by Amanda Wagner when she'd led the GBI's rapid extraction team. He could pretty much talk the fleas off a dog. Again, following procedure, Will had put out an APB on Kayla Alexander's white Prius and issued a Levi's call, George's version of the Amber Alert, for Emma Campano. This meant that all the highway message boards in Atlanta, as well as radios and television sets in Georgia, would carry some sort of warning asking folks to come forward if they saw the car or the girl. Will had also set up traces on all the family telephones and cell phones, but he doubted there was a ransom call coming anytime soon. His gut told him that whoever had taken Emma Campano didn't want her for money. One look at Kayla Alexander told that story. The young woman had been beaten and raped by a sadist who had probably enjoyed every minute of it. There was only one reason to take a hostage from the scene, and it wasn't for cash. All Will could do at this moment was hope that he found something, anything, that pointed the way to the man before he killed again.
This ends Disc 1. Fractured, Disc 2.
Will stood out in the hallway as he watched the crime scene tech taking photos of Emma Campano's bedroom. He was trying to get a sense of who she was, but nothing stood out except for the fact that she was a tidy young woman. Neatly folded clothes that were waiting to be put up lined the top of a velvet bench with silk tassels, and the books on the shelves were stacked in straight rows. Some sort of floral air freshener gave the room a sickly sweet smell. Outside the window, a small wind chime tinkled from a rare summer wind. Though Emma's personal mark didn't stand out, there was no mistaking the space belonged to a very fortunate teenage girl. The four-poster bed had a bright pink coverlet with purple sheets and heart-shaped pillows. The walls were painted a soothing light lilac that complemented the geometrically patterned shag rugs on the hardwood floor. There was a flat-panel television mounted over a large fireplace. Two comfortable-looking chairs were by the window. A book was pressed open on the arm of one, a romance from the look of it. Two purses had been thrown onto the other chair. A backpack was on the floor, stuffed with school books and loose papers. Two pairs of identical flip-flops had been kicked off by the door. One set was a larger size than the other. That at least explained why the girls were barefoot. The tech took a couple more photographs, the flash filling the room. He asked Will, "Anything specific you want me to cover?" "Can you test the fluid on the bed?" The sheets were bunched up in a knot. The dark purple material made signs of sexual activity obvious. "I need to get the kid out of my truck," the tech said. "You need anything else?" Will shook his head and the man left. Outside, a heavy door slammed, making the familiar thumping sound that Will always associated with death. He walked to the window and saw Pete Hansen standing behind the coroner's van, hand flat to the back door as he took a moment to pay his respects to the dead bodies inside. Pete had given Will a preliminary rundown, but they wouldn't have hard facts until the autopsies were performed tomorrow morning. The Atlanta Police Department had moved from a primary to supportive role now that there was a kidnapping involved. Leo Donnelly was probably calling his accountant at the moment, trying to figure out if he could take early retirement. Will had tossed him the task of tracking down Kayla Alexander's parents and telling them that their daughter had been murdered. That seemed punishment enough, though Amanda might have something to say about that. Will tugged on a pair of latex gloves as he prepared to search Emma's room. He started with the two purses on one of the chairs. Methodically, Will searched each one. He found pens, tampons, candy, loose change at the bottom, exactly what you'd expect to find in any woman's handbag. The leather wallets in each were identical, both with the same designer logo on them, and he assumed the girls had bought them on a shopping trip together. They each had a Visa card with their name on it. Their driver's license photos showed images of two remarkably similar-looking girls, blonde-haired, blue-eyed. Emma Campano had obviously been the prettier of the two, but there was a defiant tilt to Kayla Alexander's chin that made Will think she was the one who'd gotten all the attention. Not anymore. The news crews were still swarming outside. Will was sure every station had broken into regular programming with the story. Thanks to the endless and annoying commercials, the Campano name was well known to Atlantans. Will wondered if the family's notoriety would help or hinder the case. He also wondered what was happening to Emma Campano right now. Will looked at her picture again. Maybe he was reading too much into it. But there seemed to be an air of reticence about her, as if she expected the photographer to find fault instead of beauty.
Adam David Humphrey, Faith Mitchell said.
Like Will, she was wearing a pair of latex gloves. Also like Will, she was holding an open wallet and a driver's license in her hands. This one belonged to the dead man downstairs.
He's got an Oregon state license, no car registered in his name in either state. The principal at the girls' school has never heard of him, and he was never a student there.
She handed Will the plastic ID card. Will squinted his eyes at the tiny letters.
One of the guys back at the station is trying to get in touch with the local sheriff up there. The address makes it hard.
He patted his pockets, looking for his glasses. Why is that?
Her tone was almost as condescending as Amanda's. Rural route?
Sorry, I left my reading glasses at the office. A rural route with a box number would not necessarily correspond with a physical address. Unless the Humphreys were well known in town, this added another hoop to jump through before the dead boy's parents could be informed. Will sat back on his heels, studying the license photo of Adam Humphrey. He was a good-looking kid, in a geeky sort of way. His mouth was twisted into a grin, and his hair was longer in the photo, but there was no mistaking that Adam Humphrey was the man lying dead downstairs. He's older than I thought.
19 is still young.
What's he doing in Atlanta?
Will answered his own question. College.
Faith checked through the wallet, calling out what she found.
$6 cash. A photograph of an older couple, probably grandparents. Wait a minute.
The gloves were too long for her fingers, making it difficult for her to dig around. Will waited patiently until she pulled out a photograph.
Is this Emma?
He compared the photo against the licenses he had found in the two purses. Emma was happier in the picture from the wallet, her mouth open in laughter.
It's her.
Faith looked at them both, then nodded her agreement.
She looks younger than 17,
Will said. Adam's got a thing for Emma, not Kayla. So why is Kayla dead? She put the photo back into the wallet and dropped them both in a plastic evidence bag.
Maybe she got in the way.
Will nodded, though the vicious manner in which the girl had been raped and killed made him think there was more to it than that. We'll know more when Pete does the autopsy. Do the parents want to see her body?
The parents don't even know yet.
Will's mouth opened to ask why the hell not, but she talked over him.
The school principal told Leo that the Alexanders are on a 3-week vacation in New Zealand and Australia.
They left emergency contact numbers for their hotels. Leo called the manager at the Mercure Dunedin. He promised he'd get the parents a call as soon as they get back from sightseeing, whenever that might be. There's an 18-hour time difference, so it's already tomorrow morning for them. Faith added, I sent a cruiser to their house on Pace's Ferry. No one was home. They couldn't have left their daughter alone for 3 weeks.
She was 17 years old. She was old enough to take care of herself.
Her face flushed as she seemed to realize that the exact opposite was true. Did Abigail Campano give you anything when you talked to her?
It was a different conversation. We both thought her daughter was dead.
Will recalled. She's the one who told you that Kayla would probably be at school.
Right, she even said at least Kayla is safe.
Did Leo ask the principal about the girls skipping?
She confirmed it's been a problem.
Students aren't allowed off campus during lunch, but some of them sneak out and come back in before the bell rings. There's a hole in the security cameras behind the main class building, and the kids take advantage of it. Send some extra cruisers to the school. Until we know there's no connection, I want to make sure we keep a close eye on the rest of the students. Also, let's try to get a dump on the Alexander's phone. There has to be an aunt or a family friend who's been checking in on her. Send a uniform to knock on the neighbors' doors. It's coming on supper time. People should be getting home by now. She had tucked the wallet under her arm as she wrote down his instructions in her notebook. Anything else? He looked at the book bag, all the papers spilling out of it. Send someone up here who can work fast to go through all these notes. Tell Leo to talk to the school principal again. I want a list of Kayla and Emma's known acquaintances. If any of the teachers are still at school, tell him to talk to them, see what the girls were like, who they hung out with. Then I'll go back at them tomorrow after they've had the night to think about it. The girls were truants, so they might be hanging out with kids from other schools. He stopped, going back to the dead kid downstairs. Finding out who Adam was and what he was doing in Atlanta was the only tangible lead they could follow. He took out one of his business cards and handed it to her. Call back that sheriff in Oregon and give him my cell number. Tell him to call me as soon as he gets anything on Adam Humphrey's parents. For now, I want you focused on finding out why Adam was in Atlanta. Track down the college angle first. She shook her head. He'd have a college ID on him if he was in school. If he came here all the way from Oregon, then it was probably for something specific. Law, medicine, art. Start with the big schools first, then move on to the little ones. Emory, Georgia State, Georgia Tech, SCAD, Kennesaw. There has to be a list online. She was incredulous. You want me to call every college and university in the city, track down the registrar who's probably already gone for the day, and ask them to tell me without a warrant whether or not they've got Adam Humphrey on their rolls? I do. The scowl she had given him before had nothing on her expression now. Will was fed up with her attitude. Detective Mitchell, I think your anger is commendable. But the fact that I banged up six of your guys for skimming off of drug dealers doesn't mean a hell of a lot to the parents who lost their kids today, or the ones who are waiting to find out whether or not their daughter is still alive. And since the Atlanta Police Department mishandled this case from the get-go, and since the only reason you are still involved in this case is because I need people to do my scut work, I expect you to follow directions no matter how mundane or ludicrous my requests seem to you. She pressed her lips together, fury burning in her eyes as she tucked the photograph back into the wallet. I'll bag this as evidence and start calling the schools. Thank you. She made to go, then stopped. And it was 7.
What?
The cops. It was 7 that you banged up, not 6.
I stand corrected, was all Will could think to say. She turned on her heel and left the room. Will let out a deep breath, wondering how long it was going to take before he kicked Faith Mitchell off this case. Then again, it wasn't like he had the whole police department behind him, so maybe he wasn't in a position to be choosy. Even though Faith seemed to despise him as much as the next cop, she was still following orders. There had to be something said for that. Will stood in the middle of the room, trying to decide what to do next. He looked down at the rug, the circular patterns that resembled something out of a 1970s James Bond movie. Emma Campano should be his priority right now, but the confrontation with the Atlanta detective still nagged at him. Something rattled loose in his brain, and he finally understood. 7, Faith Mitchell had said. She was right. 6 cops had been fired, but one more had also been affected by the scandal. A police commander named Evelyn Mitchell had been forced to retire. Because Evelyn's daughter was a detective on the force, Faith Mitchell had naturally caught Will's attention. She had a fairly solid record, but her promotion 5 years ago to detective had raised a few eyebrows. 28 was a little young for the gold shield, but it was hard to prove that any favoritism had been shown. Nepotism aside, Will hadn't found anything warranting a deeper dig into Faith Mitchell's life, so he had never met the woman in person. Until now. Crap, Will groaned. If there was anyone he'd met today who came by their hate honestly, it was Evelyn Mitchell's daughter. That must have been what Leo had been trying to tell Will when everything started to fall apart, or maybe he'd assumed Will already knew. The investigation had ended several months ago, but Will had worked on at least a dozen more cases since then. Other than being aware of the wall of hate surrounding him at the Campano house, his focus had been on the crime at hand, not the particulars of a case that had been resolved months before. There was nothing Will could do about it now. He went back to his search, checking the drawers, the cabinets that held the sorts of things you would expect to find in a teenage girl's room. He checked under the bed, then between the mattress and the box spring. There were no secret notes or hidden diaries. All her underclothes were what you would expect, which was to say there was nothing overtly sexy that might indicate Emma Campano was exploring a wilder side of life. Next, Will went to the closet. From all appearances, the Campano house was thoroughly modernized. You couldn't get blood from a stone, though, and the closet in Emma Campano's room was as the architect had originally intended, which was to say that it was roughly the size of a coffin. Clothes hung packed so tightly that the rod was sagging. Shoes lined the floor, row after row, so many of them that they were double-stacked in places. Among the Mary Janes and tennis shoes were black knee-high boots and impossibly high heels. Likewise, the light-colored blouses were punctuated by dark black jackets and black shirts with strategically placed rips held together by safety pins. Altogether, they looked like something you'd wear in the military if you were stationed in hell. Will had worked cases with teenagers before. He guessed Emma was going through some sort of stage that compelled her to dress as a vampire. The pastel sweater sets would indicate her parents were not pleased with the transformation. Will checked the top shelves, feeling under sweaters, taking down boxes of more clothes and methodically searching through each one. He checked pockets and purses, finding blocks of cedar and sachets of lavender that made him sneeze. He got down on his hands and knees to search the bottom of the closet. There were several rolled-up posters in the corner, and he opened each one. Marilyn Manson, Ween and Korn, not the sort of groups he would expect a wealthy blonde teenager to be listening to. The corners were all ripped, as if someone had torn them down. Will rolled the posters back up, then checked Emma's shoes, moving them around, making sure nothing was hidden inside or under them. He found nothing to report home about. As he turned from the closet, he was struck by the faint smell of ammonia. There was a dog bed beside him, probably meant to serve the ancient Labrador that Leo had mentioned. There were no obvious stains on the yellow bed. Will unzipped the liner, pressing his gloved fingers into the stuffing. This yielded nothing except for making his gloved hands smell faintly of dog and urine. Will heard Amanda's voice downstairs as he was zipping up the bed. She was coming up the back stairs, and from the sound of it, she was talking on her cell phone. He took off the dog-smelling gloves and changed into a fresh pair, then returned to the girl's purses, dumping them out on the floor, searching them again. Emma's cell phone had been located on a charger in the kitchen downstairs. Kayla had her own designer bag and Visa card. She certainly had a cell phone somewhere. He sat back on his heels, feeling like he was missing something. Will had searched the room in a grid pattern, sectioning each piece, even digging his gloved fingers into the shag carpet under the bed and finding nothing more startling than a piece of Jolly Rancher watermelon candy that crinkled under his touch. He had checked under furniture and felt along the bottom of drawers. He'd flipped all the rugs over. Nothing. Where had Emma been while Kayla was being attacked? What had the girl been doing while her best friend was possibly being raped, certainly being beaten and murdered? Was Will looking at this the wrong way? Having often been on the receiving end of Paul's anger at the children's home, Will knew firsthand that the Campano blood ran pretty hot. Did that sort of thing skip a generation, or was it passed down directly? The mother had said that her daughter changed lately, that she'd been acting out. Could she have been involved in Kayla's murder? Was Emma not a victim, but a participant? He looked around the room again, the stuffed teddy bears, the stars on the ceiling. Will would certainly not be the first man who had been fooled by the stereotype of an angelic young woman.
but the scenario that called for Emma being one of the bad guys didn't feel right. Suddenly, he realized what was missing. The walls were bare. Emma's room had obviously been professionally decorated, so where was the art? The photographs? He stood up and checked for nail holes where pictures had hung. He found five, as well as scratches where frames had scraped the paint. He also found several pieces of tape that on close inspection revealed torn pieces of the posters from the closet. He could easily imagine Abigail Campano being outraged to find a picture of a breast-augmented, genitalia-neutral Marilyn Manson marring this otherwise perfect girl's room. He could also see a teenage girl taking down all the framed art the decorator had chosen in retaliation.
"Trent, when you have a minute?"
Will stood, following the sound, out into the hall. Charlie Reed, a crime scene tech who had worked for Amanda almost as long as Will, was at the end of the hallway. Now that the body had been removed, the man was cleared to go about the careful cataloging of blood and evidence. Dressed in the special white bodysuit to prevent cross-contamination of the scene, Charlie would spend the next several hours on his hands and knees, going over every square inch of the scene. He was a good investigator, but his resemblance to the cop and the village people tended to put people off. Will made a point of specifically requesting Charlie on all his cases. He understood what it meant to be an outsider, and how sometimes it made you work even harder to prove people wrong. Charlie pulled down his mask, revealing a finely sculpted handlebar mustache.
"This was under the body."
He handed Will an evidence bag containing the broken, bloody guts of a cell phone.
"There's a shoe print on the plastic that's similar to the print we found downstairs, but not the shoe we found on the second victim. I'd guess our abductor nailed it with his foot, then the girl fell on it."
"Was there a transfer pattern on the body?"
"The plastic cut open the skin on her back. Pete had to peel it off for me."
Through the bag, Will made out the shattered phone. Still, he pressed his thumb on the green button and waited. There was no power to the device.
"Switch out the SIM card in your phone," Charlie suggested.
"Sprint," Will told him, recognizing the silk-screened logo on the back of the silver phone. The phone didn't use a SIM card. The only way to access any information stored on the device would be to have a technician hook it up to a computer and pray. Will said, "It must belong to either the kid downstairs, Kayla, or somebody else."
"I'll rush it through the lab once we get prints," Charlie offered, holding out his hand for the phone. "The IMEI has been scratched off."
The IMEI was the serial number that cell phone networks used to identify a particular phone on the grid. "Scratched off on purpose?" Charlie studied the white sticker near the battery casing.
"Looks rubbed off from use to me. It's an older model. There's duct tape residue on the sides. I'd guess it was falling apart long before it was crushed. Not what I'd expect a teenage girl to carry."
"Why is that?"
"It's not pink, and it doesn't have Hello Kitty stickers all over it."
He had a point. Emma Campano's phone had a bunch of pink plastic charms dangling from the case. Will said, "Tell the lab this has priority over the computer." They had found a MacBook Pro downstairs that belonged to Emma Campano. The girl had enabled File Vault, encryption software so secure that not even Apple could unlock it without the password. Unless Emma had used something simple like the name of the family dog, nothing short of the NSA could break it open. Charlie said, "I found this over by the table." He held up another plastic bag that contained a brass key. "Yale lock, pretty standard. No usable fingerprints on it."
"Was it wiped down?"
"Just used a lot. There aren't any prints to lift."
"No keychain?" Charlie shook his head.
"If you had it in your pocket and you were wearing baggy pants, it could easily come out during a struggle."
Will looked at the key, thinking that if it had a number or address on it, his job would be so much easier.
"Mind if I hold on to this? I've already cataloged it, just make sure it gets back to evidence."
"Will?" Amanda had been hovering behind him. "I talked to Campano."
He pocketed the key Charlie had found, trying to hide his sense of dread along with it.
"And?"
"He wants you off the case,"
she said, but didn't seem to think that was worth discussing.
"He says that they've had some problems with Emma lately. She was a good girl, the perfect child. Then she got mixed up with this Kayla Alexander sometime last year, and everything went to hell.
In what way?
She started skipping school, her grades started to fall, she started listening to the wrong music and dressing the wrong way.
He told her about what he'd found in Emma's room. I'm guessing they made her take down the posters.
Typical teenager stuff, Amanda said. I wouldn't trust the father so much on where the blame lies. I have yet to meet a parent who admits that his own child is the bad apple.
She tapped her watch, her signal that they were wasting time.
Tell me what progress we've made.
Will told her. The deceased male is Adam Humphrey. He's got an Oregon driver's license.
He's a student?
Detective Mitchell is calling local colleges to see if he's registered. We're still trying to track down Alexander's parents.
You know, the key to breaking this is going to be finding a second person who knows at least one of our victims.
Yes, ma'am. We're running dumps on all the telephones. We just need a lead to follow.
GHP is pulling a negative, she said, meaning the Georgia Highway Patrol. White is a popular color for the Prius, but there aren't that many on the road. Unfortunately, we're heading into rush hour, so it's not going to get easier.
I've got uniforms pulling video from every ATM and storefront on Peachtree, as well as anything in the Ansley Mall area. If the Prius left either way, we might get an image we can work with.
Let me know if you need more feet on the ground. She rolled her hand, meaning for him to continue.
The knife doesn't match anything in the kitchen or the carriage house, which points to the killer bringing it with him. It's pretty cheap, wooden handle, fake gold grommets. But it's obviously sharp enough to do some damage. The brand is for commercial use only. It's the kind of thing you'd find at Waffle House or Morrison's. The local supplier says he sells millions of them a year just in the metro area. Amanda always thought in terms of how she could frame a case for the prosecutor. Bringing the knife to the crime scene shows intent. Go on. There's dried blood on the glass outside the front door. Whoever broke it already had blood on his or her hand. It's on the outside of the pane. I'd guess it would take someone with an arm that was around 3 feet long to reach in through that window and unlock the front door.
So, no forced entry. The girls let their attacker into the house. Whoever busted the glass obviously wanted to make it look as if he broke in. Amanda mumbled. I suppose we have CSI to thank for his stupidity.
Or someone smart enough to make it look stupid. She raised an eyebrow.
Possibly. Do you think we should be looking at the father more closely?
He sells cars and he's a jerk. I'm sure there's a long list of enemies, but this feels deeply personal. Look at Kayla Alexander. Whoever killed her was furious. If you're a hired gun, you go in, take out the target, and leave. You don't spend time beating her, and you don't use a knife.
What was your conversation like with Paul Campano?
He doesn't seem to know a lot about her life, Will said. Thinking back on the interview, he realized that this fact seemed to be the genesis of Paul's anger. It was as if he had never met his own daughter. The mother had to be sedated. I'll go back at her first thing tomorrow.
Do we know if Alexander was raped?
Pete isn't sure yet. Bruising would indicate yes, and there's sperm in her vagina, but it's also on the crotch of her panties.
So she stood up and put on her underwear at some point after intercourse. Let's see if the sperm comes back to our other victim, if that's what we're calling corpse number two for the moment.
Amanda pressed her finger to her lip as she thought this through.
What about the mother? Hysterics? Sedation? Pretty dramatic stuff. And it conveniently takes her out of the spotlight.
I think she's genuinely horrified about what's happened. And she's scared she's going to be arrested for killing someone in cold blood. Amanda looked at the dark, congealed pool where the body had lain.
Good defense, if you ask me. Let's go back to the father. Maybe he was molesting the daughter.
Will felt his body break out in a sudden cold sweat. He wouldn't do that. Amanda studied him.
Do you have a previous relationship with this person that I should know about?
What did he say?
She gave him a sharp smile. You don't have the luxury of not answering my question.
Will felt his jaw working and made himself stop. It was a long time ago. Amanda seemed to realize Charlie was at her feet, picking through carpet fibers with a pair of tweezers. She murmured to Will,
"A discussion for another time."
"Yes, ma'am." Amanda's tone went back to normal.
"Charlie, can you walk me through this?"
Charlie finished what he was doing and stood up with a groan, rubbing one of his knees as if he needed to work some life back into it. He pulled down his mask again. "We looked at with the blood. The female decedent is B negative, the male decedent is O negative. The carpet here," he indicated the shoe prints, "shows almost exclusively B, indicating the female decedent."
"Charlie," Amanda stopped him, "just paint me a story. Adam and Kayla, go."
He allowed a smile at the situation.
"This is all supposition, of course, but we might assume Kayla was chased down this hallway toward the back staircase. The killer caught up with her about here."
He indicated a distance of about 3 feet behind them.
"We found a significant patch of hair, part of the scalp still attached, here."
He pointed to another spot on the carpet.
"From this, we might conclude that she was jerked back by her hair and fell onto the floor. Possibly this is the point at which she was raped, or not. The probability that she died here is very high."
Amanda looked at her watch again. Like Will, she hated the fact that forensics worked in the couched language of possibly and most likely instead of dead certainty. She asked, "Is this the part where we get past assumptions and down to hard science?"
"Yes, ma'am," Charlie answered. "As I said before, the blood types make it easier. Kayla was beaten and stabbed here. You can see the cast-off pattern on the wall."
He indicated slashes of dark blood.
"The killer was in a frenzy, probably furious from chasing her, or maybe from seeing her with another man, Adam, you could suppose."
Will asked, "How long would the attack have taken?" Charlie looked at the walls, the stained floor.
40 to 50 seconds, maybe a full minute or two if rape occurred."
"Does anything in the pattern suggest that someone tried to stop him?" Charlie put his hand to his chin, studying the blood.
"No, actually, these arcs are fairly perfect. If he'd been interrupted or someone tried to stop his arm from swinging, we would see more variation. This is extremely uniform, almost like a machine going up and down."
Will supplied, "The coroner says Kayla was stabbed at least 20 times, maybe more." Charlie moved on to the footprints.
"There was definitely a lot of activity after she was dead. You can see from the two sets of footprints that two people, one of them with shoes matching Adam's, walked back and forth here."
"Do you see signs that they struggled?"
Charlie shrugged.
"It's hard to say because of the carpet. On a smoother surface, I could tell you where the weight of the foot was if someone was caught off balance or pressing forward to fight with someone else."
Amanda said, "Best guess."
"Well," Charlie shrugged again, "it seems probable in the greater context of the scene that there was a struggle. What I can definitely tell you is that at some point Adam was on his knees beside the body. We've got the blood pattern on his jeans as well as the tops of his shoes. I have a theory that he reached out," Charlie stretched his arm out near the bloody handprint, "and leaned his hand against the wall as he put his ear to Kayla's mouth."
Will stopped him. "Why do you say that?"
"He's got a light spray of B negative just around here."
He indicated his own ear.
"There's also that spray of O negative on Kayla's abdomen, which you pointed out to me earlier. I'd draw the same conclusion as you. He removed the knife from his own chest while he was bending over her. In fact, we found a mixture of both blood types on the weapon."
"Any fingerprints?"
"Just one set. Preliminarily, we'll say they're Adam's, but they'll have to confirm that at the lab. There were also markings on the knife handle that looked consistent with someone wearing latex gloves."
Amanda told Will, "Throw wearing surgical gloves in with him bringing the knife to the scene, and we've got premeditated murder." Will didn't point out that they would have to find the killer before they could charge him. "What about the footprint downstairs?"
"That's where it gets interesting," Charlie began. "Type O positive,"
Amanda said. "Different from the two victims."
"Exactly," Charlie confirmed. "We found several spots on the stairs, a couple more up here. My guess is that whoever the blood belongs to was unconscious. As Will and I suggested, she was carried down the stairs. Either the abductor had to stop at the bottom to reposition her, or she came to and started a struggle. Somehow her foot touched the ground at that one spot."
Will told Amanda, "I've asked Charlie to luminol the house top to bottom. I'm curious about where Emma Campano was while her friend was being attacked."
"It follows that she was unconscious somewhere,"
Not here, Charlie supplied. At least not by what the blood tells us.
Will said, we've had a lot of mistakes made today. I want to make sure that footprint downstairs belongs to Emma Campano. She's got a ton of shoes in her closet. Maybe you can get a latent.
It's a long shot, but I can certainly try.
Amanda asked, did you find any sperm in this area?
Nothing.
But Kayla Alexander had sperm on and in her person.
Yes.
She told him, I want a rush DNA comparison against both Adam Humphrey and Paul Campano. Check the master bathroom for hair or any tissue you can find that might belong to the father.
She looked at Will as if waiting for him to object.
I want to know who this girl has been having sex with, consensual or otherwise.
She didn't wait for a response, turning on her heel after tossing a Will over her shoulder. He followed her down the back stairs and into the kitchen. Will tried to get ahead of her on the blame game. Why didn't you tell me Faith Mitchell's mother was part of my investigation? She started opening and closing drawers.
I assumed you would use your brilliant detective skills to make a connection between the two last names.
She was right, but Evelyn Mitchell hadn't been a priority for him for a long time. Mitchell is a common name.
I'm glad we have that settled.
Amanda found what she was looking for. She held up a kitchen knife, looked at the silver B on the handle. Ayol. Nice.
Amanda. She placed the knife back in the drawer. Faith will be your partner going forward on this investigation. We've pissed off the Atlanta Police Department enough this year without pulling another major case from them, and I'd rather partner you with a goat than put Leo Donnelly on this.
I don't want her.
I don't care, she shot back. Will, this is a major case I'm handing you. You're 36 years old now. You're never going to move up if we both know this is as far as I'm going to get.
He didn't give her room to disagree.
I'm never going to do PowerPoint presentations or stand in front of a chalkboard filling in a timeline.
She pursed her lips, staring at him. He wondered why the disappointment in her eyes bothered him so much. As far as he knew, Amanda didn't have any children or even a family. She wore a wedding ring sometimes, but that seemed to be more for decoration than declaration. For all intents and purposes, she was as much an orphan as he was. Sometimes he thought that she was like the dysfunctional, passive-aggressive mother he'd never had, a fact which made Will glad that he had grown up in the children's home.
She said, "It's dry erase now. You don't get chalk on your hands."
"Oh, well, sign me up."
She smiled ruefully. "How do you know Paul Campano?"
"I knew him when I was 10 years old. We didn't get along."
"Is that why he doesn't want to talk to you?"
"It could be," Will admitted. "But I think my knowing him might also be a way in."
Hoyt Bentley has posted a $50,000 reward for information leading to his granddaughter's safe return. He wanted to come out of the gate with $500,000, but I managed to talk him down.
Will didn't envy her the task. Men like Bentley were used to being able to buy their way out of anything. A more lucrative reward would have backfired in so many ways, including bringing out every fruitcake in the city.
"I bet you they're going to hire their own people to stick their noses into this."
Will recognized a sucker bet when he saw one. Atlanta's wealthy had a bevy of private security forces at their disposal. Hoyt Bentley had enough money to buy every last one of them. "I'm sure Paul and his father-in-law think they can take care of this themselves."
"I hope whoever they hire knows the difference between paying off a CEO's mistress and negotiating a ransom."
Surprised, Will said, "Do you think there will be a ransom demand?"
"I think there will be several. None of them from our kidnapper."
She crossed her arms, leaning against the counter.
"Tell me what's bothering you."
Will didn't have to think in order to answer her question. Two teenage girls, at least one teenage boy, alone in a house during the middle of the day. The parents don't know where any of them are. They say their daughter has changed lately, that she's been acting out. Somebody had sex in that bed upstairs. Where were Emma and Adam when Kayla was being butchered? Where was Emma when Adam was stabbed? We have to ask whether or not Emma Campano is a victim or an offender. Amanda let that sink in, considering the possibilities.
"I'm not saying you're wrong," she finally told him.
But there's a big difference between being a rebellious teenager and being a cold-blooded killer. Nothing about the scene points to anything